Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hoo-er, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
They might talk about humor, music, film, books, football, and box sets, exercise, and maybe even food. Trivia and sport, politics and health, sometimes well-being too. On the Life with Brian. On the Life with Brian.
Hello and welcome to Life with Brian. I'm your host, Mark, and I'm joined as ever by Matthew Crist. Hiya, Matthew.
Hello.
And of course, I've got Brian McClay here. Hiya, Brian.
Hello.
And just like last time, we've got another guest with us. This week, we're joined by the esteemed author, journalist, and now co-host of his own brand new podcast called The Perspective, Paddy Barclay. Welcome, Paddy. How are things?
I'm very well indeed, thank you, and thank you very much for the plug. I promise I didn't ask for that, so it's very, very sweet of you, and I much appreciated. Thank you.
No worries. Okay, let's kick off then. Brian, what have you been up to since the last time we spoke?
Well, because we've had such a highly regarded and influential guest this week, I thought I would... I've been musing about things that were pertaining to Patrick's, potentially Patrick's career and life in general. I could be wrong, all this stuff, because it's the internet is, or the interweb is notorious for having false or fake news, Patrick, but you were born and brought up in Dundee.
Correct. No, I was born in London.
You were in Dundee at some point.
But I left at the age of two because I didn't like the politics.
But yes, you mentioned that. Did your parents work for DC Thompson? I know you did.
My mum did. My mum used to write. My parents split up. That's why I was born in London and moved up to Dundee. And my mum used to write. What in those days was called women's fiction, which would now be called romantic fiction, regardless of gender. And she managed to get me an interview at DC Thompson's after I left Dundee High School, which is right opposite the DC Thompson building in Dundee. And so I just walked straight out of the playground into this interview with DC Thompson's and managed to pass, so I got a job as an office boy on the Dundee Evening Telegraph. That was my first job in journalism when I got sacked.
What I wanted to ask you about then, so what age were you were in Dundee when you were a kid in teenage years?
Yeah.
So what the thing that's kept me awake most nights is this question: because your mother was working for DC Thompson, did you get free comics?
No, I used to shoplift them from
That's another question. That's amazing. Oh, that was another question I had for you later on. I wanted to know. Well, the question I wanted to ask you was, which one did you do particularly after? Was it the Bunty?
No.
Was it Jackie? Was it maybe Commando, or was it the Beano or the Dandy?
Right. Well, actually, that you've as usual with you, Brian, you've measured your cross to perfection, because when I was about 16 and in the office, one of the perks you got was that the people from the Jackie would come round and pick a boy and a girl from one of the offices to go on a photo shoot. And we were I was taken with this girl, I think her name was Julie Thompson. And the two of us were taken to a park, Camperdown Park in Dundee. And we did a photo shoot and she was gorgeous, by the way. And all I had to do, I got an afternoon off, and all I had to do was sit gazing into her eyes and occasionally intertwining my fingers with hers to imitate it, so that they could put these romantic images on the front of Jackie. And one of the pictures of me and Julie Thompson, although I have to say that Julie was more front on in the picture, you know, because she was she looked like Julie Christie. And I looked like a version of myself, but with hair. So obviously she was the main focus of the picture. But we appeared in a romantic sort of pose on the front of Jackie. But no, my paper of choice was the Dandy. I was Desperate Dan, you know, Cow Pie, you know, the whole thing. And Urwali, of course, was another hero of mine and still is to this day.
Because when I was looking this stuff up, I realised that my gran used to buy me the Dandy. It came out on Monday, I think.
You were either Dandy or Beano. You couldn't be. It's like saying I support Rangers and Celtic. You know, you were one or the other.
Yeah, well, I was Dandy. I've always been Dandy as well. So.
Much better favourite. Did you graduate to one of the Rover Hotspur? Was it an adventure?
I'll give you my roll of comics now. So,
okay.
My gran bought me the Dandy. Mm-hmm. But I used to read my sister's Bunty.
Yeah.
So I quite like the Four Marys, which is kind of half relevant to a previous thing and everything. And then I went on from the Dandy to Shoot.
Oh, yeah.
And my sister got Jackie, but I read the Jackie because when I was looking at the research, different things about the Jackie, there was a couple of things that came up. And in the 83 and 84, Johnny Marr of the Smiths was in the Jackie three times.
Wow.
And there's loads of music stuff. So I think maybe that was one of the influences on my musical.
Oh, so the content of Jackie, because I never thought of you, Brian, really, as being a romantic in that sense, you know, being a softie. So there was actually good content in Jackie as well. It wasn't.
Yeah, because in this, and there was an 80Z, you know, like a questionnaire to 80Z with Johnny Marr in 83 or something like that.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing for me was that they were intended to use, when he got to X, he was intended to use a xylophone in the next album. So
brilliant.
So and he was featured three different bits over a small period of time, and I don't know. I'd imagine that it was, because I mean Jackie was hugely popular.
Yeah, but
there was some good content in it. Yeah,
yeah. You're talking about a later era where it had obviously developed quite a bit, but I was in when this was more or less when it started. I mean, you've got to bear in mind, I'm talking about nearly 20 years,
1938 or something like that.
my career was destroyed by the Second World War, you know. But it was good times there, you know. They sacked me at the Dundee Evening Telegraph, but they did it nicely. They told me I could look around for a new job, and they were as good as their word. They let me just hold down this job until I found something else. I've always liked DC Thompson because of that.
So I'll finish my comic history or my publication history, even though I read them. So I went to Shoot and Match.
Yeah.
Smash Hits.
Yeah.
NME.
Oh, yes.
No, Smash Hits 2000 AD.
Yeah.
Smash Hits, then NME.
What did you... You must have read Rolling Stone as well.
Oh, no, I've only... there's no way that there was ever a Rolling Stone magazine in Dundee. I'm not having that. There certainly wasn't any in Airdrie.
But there was Melody Maker. But I preferred Melody NME. Maker, yeah. NME had a lovely little gossip column, your one-liners. I think it was on the back page. I hear that so-and-so... And there were all sorts of people who would appear in this as if they were great celebrity. Oh, I saw so-and-so. I saw Dave Lee Travis coming out of the Marquee Club yesterday. That would be a news item. I mean, these guys were treated as great stars, you know, the DJs of the time. But I once again, Brian, you know, you and I are separated by quite a few, by a generation, at least.
Not really, no. No, you just look that old, that's all.
I've had a hard life, mate, as you know.
What are the highlights of
trying to follow your career for a start?
One of the highlights for me was that I featured in a crossword clue in NME.
No.
It was me and Paul McStay.
What was
Paul McStay, and it's what was it, 5 and 5. Me and Paul McStay might adorn this, and it's 5 and 5, and it's a musical content.
I obviously know the answer to this, but I'm not going to. I'm not going to spoil the surprise.
5 and 5.
I'll give you another clue: Declan McManus,
Elvis
Costello.
Costello's not 5, is it?
That's who sang it, Paddy.
What a song!
Yeah, relating to Paul McStay and myself.
I was never very good at crosswords, so
put us out of our misery, Brian.
The answer is Green Shirt.
Green Shirt is one of his.
Yeah, it's a song by Elvis Costello, and that was in the NME crossword with McStay and me as the clue.
Oliver's Army is about as much as I can cope with.
This wasn't the edition of NME where the pair of you look like you're out of Wham, is it?
That was a different magazine altogether. How do you know that?
I've seen the pictures, don't worry.
What magazine was that, Brian? Isn't it still in your mum's loft or something, or buried away somewhere? You've got it now.
I've got it, yeah.
So do you want to give enlighten us a bit on this famous picture of you and Paul McStay looking like George?
It was a new music publication based on Scottish music and football. I can't remember what it was called, but Paul McStay and I were asked by Bobby Bluebell if he would be interested in being to take part in this, and me and him went along to somewhere in Glasgow thinking it would be a 10-minute thing, and we were there all day getting interviewed with various things about football and music, and then these pictures, which gullibly, naively, we allowed to happen. And then there's a double page. We were on the front cover, a double page spread of McStay and me in the George and Andrew pose with the leather jackets on. And
I dare say you were in makeup for a good half.
Nothing underneath.
I dare say you were in makeup for a good half of that day. Was that why?
No, nothing at all. It was just like this photographer that there was like.
Oh, there was definitely a hint of eyeliner.
I was aghast. I was thinking, what are we doing here? You know, this is going to haunt me. You know,
I'm going to put the images up on Twitter, by the way, because the magazine was called
You've
Cut.
You've got them, have you?
It's called Cut. February 1987 it was.
Yeah,
well, it's one of the great musical football duos to go with Hoddle and Waddle.
Yeah, but we were just posing. We weren't doing any performing. We were
they were actually on Top of the Pops, I think. Yeah.
You could accuse them of just posing as well and not actually.
I've got a gold single now, so I'm not that bothered about it. I've got a, you know.
That was, I assume, for Come On You Reds, was it?
It was, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
For what?
How many? The 94 Cup Final song. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It actually knocked Scottish rock band Stiltskin off number. They were number one for about 10 weeks, and I think that song knocked them off the top of the charts, if I'm not mistaken. So it must have sold a few. If you've got a gold disc, I hope you still get a bit of money from that. Must have got a few.
No, because we took our one-off payment.
Wise move.
That's what it was. I think so at the time, you know, because I thought this is no chance of being selling anything. This is garbage, you know. So, but what did I know about music at all? You know, so
don't tell me Fergie's got the rights.
The manager of State Score's got the rights. Yeah.
Yeah.
The guy who was managing State Score at the time.
Oh, really?
They featured in the song as well, didn't they?
Yeah, because they were part of it.
Yeah. But
it was basically not
a rip-off, but it was a reworking of one of their...
Oh, it's a Status Quo song. It's a Status Quo song with United. So, yeah, it's a Status Quo thing,
Yeah. I remember it well. I didn't buy it, but thousands of other people obviously did.
If I didn't buy it, it would be probably the only Status Quo song that I haven't bought. I used to love them. I used to absolutely...
Yeah, you're into them, yeah.
Adored them. Used to go to...
Did you see them? Did you go and see them? Did they ever come to Dundee or did you see them in London Manchester?
I used to go and see them. I probably first saw them in Manchester, but it became a habit. They always used to do a Christmas concert at Wembley Arena. So usually about 19th of December, something like that. And I used to go to, it was always a full house, 7,500 there. I went to that for about 10 years in a row. It was brilliant. And, I still love them, but I don't listen to the music quite as much. But
did you get all dressed up and all that?
Did you get your faded
Levi's on? No, and
probably, but I could never have worn them like
Francis. Ear guitar?
No, I would deft it all the bloody time. Yes, they used to say when I was a kid, you know, how do you torture a Scotsman? And the answer is you nail his feet to the floor and then play a Jimmy Shand record. Well, if you wanted to torture me, you'd nail my feet to the floor and play the Status Quo, you know, or nail my hands, to the wall and put a guitar in front of me and play. I used to just love them and be them, you know, and if nobody was looking. But I couldn't be as cool as Francis Rossi. I don't think anybody could. He must be the coolest bald man in the world, apart from us, Mark, obviously.
Obviously.
Were they there? Were they there for the recording, Brian? Were Rick and Francis there? So you spent a bit of time there, Decent fellas?
Yeah, great. Yeah, thank you. Irrespective, I don't think I've ever met many people you would be disappointed in how they were, you know, whether that was in, I think Paddy, you've probably come across a lot more people than me, but any discipline, whether it was music or occasional film or acting or fellow football players, they've been... I suppose they kind of had a looked at the same kind of way that I've always looked at it, is that I've always felt that I'm the same as anybody else. I'm not any better than anybody else.
That's true, Brian. But I've just had an extraordinary
job, Paddy.
Yeah, and I think that if you meet people from different ways of life, they will know who you are, and that will give you an instant validation. But I mean, I completely agree with what you say, that when you sit down with distinguished people, if I can just tell you a story. A friend of mine, you might know him, Brian, he was a football agent, Jonathan Holmes. He was agent for Lineker and other people.
Yeah.
And a few years, 2 or 3 years ago now, I suppose it was, I rang him up and said, look, next time you come to London, I've got to buy you lunch. And like a lot of rich and successful people, they change the rules, you know. You would think it would be rude, but I love Jonathan so much that it doesn't bother me. But he rang up and he says, hey, listen, can we make it dinner rather than lunch? And instead of the place where you go, can we go to the Garrick Club in London and have dinner there? So I'm thinking,
you have to do that.
You know, he's changed.
If you're invited to that, you've got to go and do that.
Absolutely, of course. But, you know, it was my turn. And you know, I'm also a Dundee boy. So I thought, and it saved me a couple of bob, you know, because if it's a Garrick Club, he'll have to pick up the tab. So anyway, he rings me up and he says, sorry to be a nuisance. Sorry to be a nuisance again. And I'm thinking, oh, fuck, what's he doing now? Is he changing it to somewhere else? He says, listen, is it all right if I invite a couple of people along? And I said, no, of course not. It's your show. It's your dinner now. Anyway, when I get there, it's Tom, there's him, me, obviously, Tom Courtney, the actor,
yay,
one of the greatest of English actors of all time, and Mark Knopfler, who I'm also a big Dire Straits fan, and I think Mark Knopfler is one of the greatest.
Well, popular. He's another slaphead, isn't he?
He's another slaphead, exactly. But anyway, we sit down, and these are two of the nicest men you could ever meet. And what's more respectful, Mark Knopfler says to me, I said, you know, trying to make conversation, I said, I believe you're a Newcastle fan. He's talking about Newcastle United. And he says, yeah, he says, you might be interested in this. When I first started supporting Newcastle, I was training as a journalist. So already I'm absolutely gobstruck by this. And then Tom Courtney's going on about Hull City and, you know, a couple of great players that I remembered. There were two strikers they had way back in the 70s. And it was the most wonderful, wonderful night. And they made me feel completely at ease. And, hey, what a bit of name dropping that was, by the way. I do apologize.
Did Jonathan pick up the tab?
He did.
I should hope so after recommending the restaurant he took you to.
He did. No, I had to pick up the taxi bill because Tom Courtney lived in Putney.
In Hull.
Putney. He says, dear boy, he said, you don't mind if we go around via Hull. And he lives in Putney on the way home to me. And I'm thinking, well, normally what I'd do is dial an Uber and all that, but I'm thinking, well, since I'm with Tom Courtney, I really ought to hail a black cab. So, my man! And we're getting a black cab, so it's about 50 quid by the end. But anyway, it was a great night. Brilliant night. Brilliant night.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino. With cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Well, that kind of takes us on to what I was going to ask you. I wanted to talk to you about where your paths are crossed in, you know, in previous years and what have you, and what we used to call...
Are you talking about Brian McClare? Can I tell you a Brian McClare story?
You can tell us any story you want.
No, what was the question? Tell me what the question was going to be.
Well, it wasn't really a question. I just was interested to know whether your Yeah, where your paths are crossed in the past when you were working in what we used to call Fleet Street, Paddy. But yeah, but also before we get to that, I wanted to clear something up with this incident where you apparently mistook Brian for one of his.
Don't let me, because Brian won't know this. I'll tell it. It's basically I probably got to know Brian after, and you'll correct me if I'm wrong, Brian, but I got to know him better. And by the way, what a fantastic lad, and what help he gave me when I was doing a thing up in Lanarkshire a couple of years ago. I will never forget how kind you were in giving your time and bringing the house down, Brian. I really appreciate that. But
yeah, but there's only three people there.
That's because we didn't bill you. That's because I was.
Two of them are me and you.
That's because I was stopping the bill. But it was. Yeah. But there were three nice people, and it was in a lovely place. It was another Motherwell Football Club. It was
a telephone box. Was in Motherwell.
Anyway, so but Brian's boss at that time, a guy called Ferguson, made sure that the likes of me and the likes of him never really had much time for fraternizing. So, you know, we were kept very much. He was a footballer and I was one of the guys penned in the press box. But speaking of press boxes, when people say to me, what was your worst moment in 40 years as a journalist? That's easy. Brian McClure. I was at this game, Chelsea against Man United. And bear in mind that at that time, I was in the peak of my career, such as it was. It'd be about 90. When did you... what years were you at United, Brian? It was about 88 to 90...
87 to 98.
Yeah, so this would be about the mid-90s, I would say, 94, something like that. And United were playing at Stamford Bridge against Chelsea. And Brian was in the team. Also in the team at that time would be Andy Cole, a few others. I can't really remember the full details. But and this is not an excuse for me, because I do not come out of this story well. But the press box at Stamford Bridge, you know, it's like where the players run out. You know, you could almost lean over and touch them, although it's not recommended. But you're very low down, and if somebody in front of you stands up, you don't get that great a view. Anyway, I'd done my research before the game, and so I'd been professional to that extent. And one thing I did know, and it was in my head as I went to the game, was that Andy Cole hadn't scored in something like 9 games, which was unusual for him. And very unusual for him. So that was one of the facts I had going around my head. There might have been a couple of others, that Carino or something, or who was ever in goal for Chelsea, had kept 6 clean sheets. But you when you go to do a live match report, and this, I must have been on The Observer at the time, because it was a Saturday afternoon match, and you have to write them as you go along. You know, people kind of think you can go to the pub, have a nice meal, think about the game, watch match of the day, wake up on a Sunday morning, write your match report for The Observer and deliver it through under people's doors, you know. But of course, it's not like that. You have to write it while the match is actually going on for the early editions, and then you get a chance to rewrite and tidy up for the editions that go to big cities like London and Manchester. So anyway, I'm doing my early edition, what we call running match report from Chelsea Man United. And I see United take the lead. They ended up winning 4-1, but they take the lead with, and I can see Andy Cole score the goal. And I go, yes, brilliant. I've got my theme. You've got to write it more or less at half time, a lot of it. And so you're looking for something you're looking for a sending off, basically, or a bad injury. or a bad injury. This is awful. But you're looking for something really that's not going to be affected by the final result. Or in the old days, a riot, but that was frivolous. We never wanted bad things to happen, but really, but they, The great thing was Andy Cole's drought, goal drought is over. This is the fantastic. He scored the goal that will last after, in his 10th attempt, Andy Cole, normal services resumed. You could see, and I could see him dancing around celebrating the goal. And I went to town on it. I said, you could see the relief in his face. There's nothing a striker likes better than to get the monkey off his back, blah, blah, blah. And off it went, and I filed it. And then United won 4-1. I continued to file it. I filed what we call a top and tail, an intro and the second half update, and sent it off. And then I heard somebody talking about Brian McClair having scored twice. And he had scored one of the others. And I said to the guy next to me, as the final whistle went, I said, that first goal, it was Andy Cole. Now, people in press boxes, when they're on a deadline, they don't tell you what the answer to your question. They're basically, the answer is, fuck off, I'm busy, right? So he says, yes. And so I thought, that's good. It was Andy Cole that got so McClair only got one. And so I'm going, I write this. And the office ring me up at about, I must have been the age of mobile phones, because the office, I rang in with a check call. I said, everything all right with my copy? And they said, actually, bit of a problem with it. They said, the agencies are giving that first goal to Brian McClair. I said, no. He said, but all the agencies have given it. So I then say, I'm going to have to check this. Anyway, I did check, and it was Brian McClair who got the opening goal. And Andy, I don't know if Andy got one later, or whether his goal drought was continuing, but whatever it was, I mean, the report was utter bollocks. And what's more, it had gone already to the first edition area. So the entire population of the outlying places that get the first edition, like people at Plymouth, are saying, fucking hell, I never rated this bloke. He's talking utter shite. You know, we watched the match of the day last night, and he thought that was Andy Cole. The thing about Andy Cole and Brian McClair is they're very easily confused. I mean, they are so similar physically. But that was definitely my worst moment that I was able to rewrite, but of course I still felt like being sick, and I'm beginning to feel slightly nauseous even reliving it now.
You didn't keep one of those newspapers, did you? That'd be great to keep that.
That's a
wonderful story. They always say it. I'd like to have read that myself. You know?
They always. You could have added it. You might have got a bonus.
You probably kept it, Brian.
He would have got a bonus, but no. There was an old rumor that Ferguson had got hold of the initial attempts of all the reporters. Luckily, I wasn't doing a live match at Barcelona 1999, when United went the 90 minutes past. United were 1-0 down to Bayern. Yeah. And all the reporters had said, Ferguson has proved that although he can hack it domestically, he's too naive to be a top manager in Europe. That, I'm sure, is what they were saying. And of course, the two goals go in from Sheringham and Solskjaer, and they suddenly have to throw all that away. But of course, it will already have gone to the office. Luckily, they wouldn't have published it, but it already gone to the office, and they would have rewritten it, "Arise, Sir Alex, the greatest manager in the history of blah, blah, blah." But there was an urban myth for a long, long time that he had got the early ones where they were calling for his head and saying he was a myth and all that. And anyway, it turns out to be not true. But I really felt so sorry. I mean, the new camp is camp now is a very, very steep ground. And I'll tell you, if I'd been up in that press box in the fifth tier, I'd have thrown myself off it. you know, that's the ultimate nightmare. Ultimate nightmare.
Well, think yourself lucky it was before the days of social media. I mean, you imagine. Imagine the backlash you had.
Oh, I was so lucky. Do you know that is a very, you know, I've never thought of that. But you are so right, because I would probably have destroyed me completely. Yeah, I would.
Paddy, you know it reminds me of the tale about Arthur Monford. Do you know that one?
Which one?
Arthur Monford is from the one that I know.
With the chain jacket.
I've heard is he's commentating on a game. It could have been a game of, I think it was Russia versus Scotland, yeah, because it sounds that kind of game at Hampden Park. And you know that old press box that used to dangle below there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So he would be in there doing his TV commentary while the dailies and the Sundays would be sitting round about him as well. And he's commentating on the game. And Russia score a goal. And he's sitting next to Ian Archer. Remember Ian Archer?
I loved Ian Archer, yeah.
Yeah, so he's a bit of a lugubrious character, yeah, isn't he? A bit, yes, laid back and a bit of droll,
English,
isn't he?
English accent.
And then great, a very dry sense of humour. And then Arthur, in his very animated way, it's a goal, the Russians have scored, they've scored a goal, it's a fantastic goal for Russia. And he put his hand over the microphone because he couldn't work out which Russian had scored the goal. And he's hand over the microphone and he turned around to Ian Archer, who's lying back next to him, watching the game, and he says to Ian, did you notice who scored that goal there? And Ian Archer turned around and said to him, "Fucked if I know." And it's a great goal for Russia. It's fucked if I know. 1-0 to Russia. Fucked if I know scores.
Brilliant.
It's a great story. I love it. And then apparently Ian Archer's looking at him going, "What are you doing?" You know, and he's like, and he's looking back thinking that he's got his thumbs up. Thanks very much for that, you know.
Ian, the most I ever got out of Ian, because I always used to think he was drunk, you know, Ian, except that until you looked at the quality of his writing, he was a magnificent writer. But all you usually got out of Ian was a raised eyebrow, you know, something like that. He had an English accent, but I don't think he was English. He was a wonderful writer for the Daily Mail, a brilliant writer. Life with Brian. You, Brian, were one of those players, because you were so consistent and because you were able to play. See, people forget. They think, you know, look at the goals, games per goal and goals per game and all that, and they think, oh yeah, striker. But a lot of games, you must have played an awful lot of games right side for Man United, central midfield.
I was very fortunate that I had this, what I would say was a very good ability or adjustable possibilities to my my football, was that I could play badly all over the pitch, and that's what I did. And it allowed me to play probably a lot more games than I would have if I had been. I suppose you could use Andrew Cole as a good as
someone
example.
Who
Andrew Cole's a scorer and a centre forward, and very very good at that. But if you weren't doing, maybe for that period, that length of time, your Jacob would be on a shuggly nail with regards to your team selection, if not indeed your career at times. Whereas I'd never been a striker, Paddy. I was a manufactured. I was somebody who played football all my life at school and in boys' clubs, who loved scoring goals from midfield. I was an old-fashioned inside right. That's what I would say. That's how I developed as a footballer, someone who would play that kind of that. In the EEC now, the way that teams are set up now and the way they're playing now is for me going back to, apart from the back four, I think a lot of it is that old formation with right halves, inside rights, outside left, outside right.
That's set true, forwards. But.
And then it's like you go, and then indeed you'll be you've done a lot of stuff about that in regards to your book about
Chapman
and things like that, and about formations and how formations have developed from the beginning of football, you know. And it's kind of strange that people are talking about new. There isn't anything, for me, there isn't anything new.
Certainly aren't, there aren't new positions. Because, I mean, people have gone back now to talking about number sixes, number eights, number nine and a halves. We all know what they mean. We all know what they mean because we've got a vague idea of what our 2-3-5 team lined up, which, of course, it never did line up like that. It always lined up 3-2-5. They were always printed in programmes as 2-3-5, but there was never any such thing after the Second World War as 2-3-5. It's quite strange. But but we know what an 8, we know the difference between a 6 and an 8. But what I'd like to say more about you, Brian, is when I look at the Manchester United team now, and you look at certain players, and you look at, for example, Paul Pogba is one, people say, now you've got to find the right position for him. You've got to have him a left there, and you've got to hit the ball there. And if you do all of that, you know, as if he's some kind of, you know, machine that depends on gravity or something. He should be able to move around the pitch and spot what needs to be done where. Now, a person in Brian's day at Manchester United, the option of not finding the right position, and you'll correct me if I'm wrong, Ferguson would not accept that as an excuse. Ferguson, now Solskjaer, Brian says that he was a number eight, really, an old-fashioned inside right who liked to score goals and reserved the right to do so whenever he played. Solskjaer was a striker or second striker, but for much of his career, he played wide right for Manchester United or on the bench. So the option of saying, I have to just be standing 8.5 yards in and to the right, and then I have to get the ball about 4 feet off the ground, and then I'm fine. Can you imagine Ferguson putting up with all that shite? I mean, a footballer is supposed to go out and play, and it's very unfortunate, but it's great player, better players than Paul Pogba will ever be. Dennis Law was a box-to-box, Brian Robson-style midfield player. He went to Manchester United because Matt Busby wanted him to play as a striker. Everybody now thinks Dennis Law was a striker. Dennis doesn't. Dennis played out of position for 600 games. Although Martin Edwards, you know, the old chairman, said that Dennis did play some games in midfield. Dennis was a midfield player, but he played every game as a striker. And Ferguson maintained that tradition. The option of not playing well because the position wasn't exactly yours would not have been available to Brian McLaren or anybody else at Man United.
Yeah, but he had that innate ability to look to take players and decide how their kind of long-term career or, I suppose, shelf life was going to be at Manchester United. And it wasn't necessarily in the position that they'd been playing for a period of time. Paul Parker, who had a great career as a football player, and was played as a second centre half at QPR
McDonald, the tall
centre half, you know, Alan McDonald. So he was the one that went there. But Paul was quick. He had a great jump. Very athletic, so he was the one that kind of did the mopping up job. But he could jump and still as well. He had a great jump, you know, a great spring for his height. And Paul played centre back all the way through that period of time. He was at QPR, as far as I mean. I think he was at Fulham before that. And when he came to discuss with Alex Ferguson about coming to Manchester United, wanted to come to Manchester United, but other players would want to be saying, well, where am I going to play? I'm going to play wherever. The gaffer would tell them what he thought they wanted to hear. Yeah, of course you play centre half. You never played centre half. I don't. I maybe played one or two games, but he was right back. And became a very good right back.
Well, he played for England.
And then he ended up playing in the World Cup. He laid on the goal for Lineker. So he ended up being a right back, and he had that kind of thing. When Roy Keane first came to United, he played loads of games at right back.
Did he? I never remember.
Loads of games
because
at right
Roy
back.
Keane,
yeah.
When he was at Forest, he liked to be an attacking midfield player. And but Ferguson had ideas about where he wanted him to play. And I mean, another example I always think of was Rio Ferdinand when he was at West Ham United and then Leeds United. I think a lot of us thought, could he be the sort of English Beckenbauer? The Scottish people used to think the same about Alan Hansen and Ferguson. Had a very clear, Ferguson didn't share that sort of romantic notion. He said, Rio Ferdinand's quick, he can defend, so he doesn't cross the halfway line. And he never did. How long was he at Man United? Never crossed the halfway line, did he?
And then, there was a game where Rio played for West Ham at Old Trafford, and West Ham lost either 6 or 7 goals.
Oh, really?
And Rio was at fault for 5 of them. he was at fault for 5 of them. And you look and you're thinking, why would anybody be? This is... And Rio started off as a winger. So you can see the football abilities had to be his feet. He was an 11 or a 7.
Yeah.
That's where he played his career and before he went to West Ham. So he'd learned how to play as a football player. So he had those things, and then he grew into the stature he did and developed into that type of player he was.
Yeah.
But I think that's one of the great abilities of Alex Ferguson, was being able to and then change it, changes the way it went along. You know, like you say, I was playing on the right, I was playing in the middle. There was one game where I'm not playing. I know I'm not playing because the team's been announced. We're going to Goodison, Mark. And we're in the hotel, and for Liverpool games at Anfield, we stayed overnight in Liverpool. For Everton, we never stayed overnight, even when they were champions. We never stayed overnight. That was gives you a measure of what Alex Ferguson's idea about playing against Liverpool was.
Yeah.
So we go to travel to the hotel on Saturday morning to have pre-match meal. We get to the hotel, have pre-match meal, and he announces the team. And I know I'm not playing because I'm not playing. And he announces the team, and I'm always could listen, but not always pay that great amount of attention. But I listen because I wasn't playing. But and then I'm thinking, and he goes and he names the team, and he gets the last player on the team, and he goes, McClare. And I'm like, what? Where am I playing? What left side of midfield, left. I'm playing like, what are you on about? I'm just and he continues on his team talk. Always lasted for half an hour. And I was playing left side of midfield, never played there really before, played a few times, not really played there before. And he'd fallen out with Andrew Kanchelskis, and he decided he's not playing, he's not having him, whatever the reason was. And I'm playing left back now. Left-sided midfield. Now, he wasn't expecting me to be Andrzej Kanchelskis. All he was expecting me was to do a job on the left side of the midfield to the whatever the abilities I had. And the other one that swings to mind about that, we're in where you went to for your first European game. You're in Turin, Paddy.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And we're playing Juventus when Juventus are in their pomp. And we're doing quite well. It's 0-0 at half time in the Champions League. And I'm on the bench, and I'm coming at half time, and he comes in, and then he's ranting and raving, and Ryan Giggs is the one who's getting the roasting. And again, I'm hacking a half listening because I'm thinking I'm not going to be involved in this game, but we're still 0-0. We're doing quite well. Okay, he's giving Giggs a tough time in it. And I can't remember exactly what happened, where Giggsy maybe had decided to give his own opinion. And the next minute it was, right, McClare, get fucking stripped. get his kit, and I'm like that, still kind of looking a different way, and I'm thinking, and look over, and I'm like, can you say my name there? And he went, yeah, get fucking ready. And I'm like, right, well, yeah, okay. And so I'll go out in the second half, and I'm playing left side midfield. So I'm playing in the left-hand side of the midfield against Conte.
Yeah.
and Pissotto, who's playing right back.
Yeah.
Right? Now, Pissotto was quick. And I'm like, well, I don't know. What am I expected to do here? And I thought, well, fair enough, whatever. So all I did for 45 minutes is when the ball came to me, I tried to control the ball and pass it to a red shirt and move someone else on the pitch. and we lost a goal. Inzaghi, who scored in the last minute, he scored in the last minute. You know, he's like the manager's comment about him. I think he said he was born offside. But I think you know, I'm probably half of his goals would be chopped off of VAR, because that's how much he played on that line.
Yeah.
And we lost the game 1-0. And I'm like mystified because I'm like no idea about. And the next day we stayed over and the next day when we came back and did the training, he decided to have a team talk that I wasn't involved in. I was away training with the reserves. And apparently he's just sent to them, making a point about me, saying about me. So what did he do? He did the simple thing. The simple thing. He got the ball and he passed it to a fucking red shirt and then he moved to another position. That's all you need to do. And that's what he trusted you to do that.
Yeah.
Trusted you. And one of the most frightening things for me is the afternoon, the lunchtime of the Cup Winners Cup final against Barcelona. Mm. He's having his team talk and he comes into the team talk. And he points his finger straight at me and goes, if you do your fucking job tonight, we win this game.
And you did.
I thought, thanks very much for that. No pressure on me.
You manned Mark Koeman in that game, didn't you?
That was my job, yeah, when they had the ball, yeah.
Koeman playing in front of the back?
He was playing as part of the back
four. Part of the back four. And you had to sit on him.
When we were out of possession, I had to stop him passing the ball, spraying passes all over the place. That was my job.
That was what year was that? 92? 91. Yeah. Because 2 years after that, that was what Milan did, wasn't it?
The following year, Barcelona got to the won the European Cup
at Wembley.
At Wembley. And that was so. Was Guardiola in that team?
No,
he must have come in later.
He wasn't playing that game.
I remember him at the Wembley game, but oh yeah, but that must have been Matt Busby was at that game, wasn't he? The one in Rotterdam.
Aye.
Well, it was Ferguson told this story about how, you know, Matt was sitting on the front seat in the behind the driver or opposite the driver, and how the fans as usual were banging on the door of the thing, saying, "Come on, lads, you know, do this, do that," and as the Fergie told Matt to get off the asked him to get off the bus first. And as soon as the fans saw Matt, they just went silent. You know, as if they, and Ferguson said in one of his books, it was, you couldn't have got more reverence for the Pope in St. Peter's Square.
Yeah, yeah.
That's St. Peter's Square in Rome, by the way, not the one in Manchester.
Where the library is.
Well, we had such fun during recording that we just kept on going and going, so much so that we ended up with enough material for 2 episodes. So why don't you come back for the second part of this very soon to enjoy Brian and Paddy talking about Gary Neville, quiz ball and bollockings from Sir Alex Ferguson. we'll also open McClare's mailbag for your questions. It will be available everywhere you get your podcasts. Cheers.
Life with Brian, talking films or music. Life with Brian, talking TV and food. Life with Brian, talking trivia and exercise. Life with Brian is different every episode. Life with Brian, talking politics and football. Life with Brian is different every episode. Life with Brian, Life with Brian.
Social Podcast Network.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.